Hi, this is the Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. This is your one-stop shop to give you that leg up in starting or running your social venture. I'm Rana, one of the directors of Flourish Together. We're an organisation that helps women changemakers like you to flourish. And it's great to have Vic, our producer, with me on this episode.
Hi, I'm Vic and I make this podcast and I swing by now and then to present bits and bobs too. And I was actually supported by the Good Eggs at Flourish about 4 years ago to help start my social enterprise, and they've yet to get rid of me. Now, before we tell you what this episode is about, do you recognise any of these behaviours? Do you have consistent negative self-talk? Or maybe it's amplified when you're not feeling so great?
Do you have the inability to internalise accomplishments and compliments?
Do you obsess over mistakes and failures, even when others don't see them as mistakes or failures?
Do you ever get the feeling of never being good enough, or just have overwhelming anxiety of being found out as a fraud?
Perhaps you're on the edge of your seat all the time, worrying that this is where I get found out, this is when people realise I'm not as good as they think I am.
Well, you may have recognised that we're talking about imposter syndrome, and in this episode, we're squaring up to it.
The reason why we're talking about it in this episode is that so many of us experience imposter syndrome at some point in our lives, and we don't always have the opportunity to share our experiences and develop the ways that we can cope with it, especially as women, and especially as women change makers and leaders.
In this episode, we want to help you recognise the way you feel, show you that you're not on your own, and give you some tools to tackle it.
We're going to be talking about our own experiences, and also to help, we've invited Dawn Kelly to share her insights with you. She's a business and executive coach and has been coaching for 16 years and has been in this line of business for over 30 years. So she's become quite an expert on imposter syndrome. We're going to take a look at the different types of imposter syndrome and how you can start changing your behaviours.
We also wanted to take the opportunity on this episode to share some great insights from women who've experienced this and the ways they've tackled it. Plus, towards the end, Dawn answers some of your questions about imposter syndrome. First up, did you know that there are 9 different types of self-saboteur? And this is where imposter syndrome comes from. So let's hear from Dawn speaking at one of our recent Lunch and Learn sessions. She explains the 9 types of imposter syndrome and how you can recognise them in yourself. Which ones are you?
So Nicola said to me whether I'd run this session. I said, yeah, that's fine. And then she said, we're going to call it Squaring Up to Imposter Syndrome. And I said, well, I've got a subheading called The Song Inside. And where that comes from, a philosopher, Theodore, back in the 19th century, he said that, you know, most people still live and die with their greatest song unsung, and that actually only 20% of us reach our full potential. One of the possible reasons for that is self-sabotage, imposter syndrome. And so you can be super, super confident, you can be great at what you're doing, but it can still affect us in different ways. There are 9 different saboteurs. They're controller, hyperachiever, restless, stickler, pleaser, hypervigilant, avoider, victim, hyper-rational. And we have one main saboteur who's our judge. And I thought, what would be the best way to describe how this can actually affect us? So I thought I'd tell a story with all these different imposter syndromes in the story to try and bring it to life, to give you an idea of what we mean by that. So we have our judge, and this is the one that constantly is finding fault with what we're doing and others and our situations and our circumstances. And it's the one that we're always judging ourselves. But the judge also has a number of accomplices. So I'm going to tell the story about a journey. So imagine that you're on a long and steep hike and the goal is to reach the summit. Then you load your backpack with huge, heavy rocks. And then you throw one on your toes every once in a while. And so that's our imposter that is leaking into. We set off really positive to climb high, and then we fill our backpack full of all of these. So let's have a look at how that could impact on our journey as we're trying to reach to the summit. So we've got on here the stickler. So the stickler is the need for protection, order and organisation taken too far. On this journey, it forces you to waste too much energy on taking perfect steps, even when perfect steps aren't really required. Then we've got the pleaser. And this compels you to gain acceptance and affection by helping, pleasing, rescuing, flattering others constantly. Now, on this journey, it has you lose sight of your own needs by letting others go ahead of you, wasting enormous time trying to gain everyone's approval. And it gets you to sacrifice your own progress. And then you actually might come to start resenting it. Then we've got the hyperachiever. And this makes you dependent on constant performance and achievement for self-respect and self-violation. Your whole focus will be to get to that summit as best and as the first and as quickly as you can. But by doing that, you might miss some of the joy and feelings of happiness around you, what we often call the here and now. And then we've got the victim. And the victim wants you to feel emotional and temperamental as a way of gaining attention and focus. But on the path, it might alienate the people that you're with as they get fed up with your dramatics and, oh, woe is me all the time. Then we've got the hyper-rationale. And this involves an intense and exclusive focus on rationalizing everything and processing. So not really a good recipe for going the distance when you're trying to rationalize everything you're doing. Why are we doing that? Isn't there a better way? Then we've got the hypervigilant. This makes you feel very intense and continually anxious and vigilant for what might happen. So this extreme vigilance wears you down and slows you down enormously instead of just being in the here and now and enjoying walking up to that summit. Then we've got the restless. This person is constantly in search of greater excitement for the next activity and the constant busyness of doing what they want to do. It causes you to take numerous detours from your path in search of greater excitement. Maybe you're the type of person who'll start something and then you'll flip onto something else and then you'll do this and then you end up with loads of things open that you need to do. How overwhelming does that make us feel? Then the final two is the controller. So runs on an anxiety-based need to take charge, control situations, and bend other people's actions to your will. But by doing this, it causes resentment. People might not want to follow your path, and it certainly doesn't create an environment of creativity and people being open to explore and try things. And then the last one is the avoider. So they focus on the positive and the pleasant in the extreme way, but avoids difficult and unpleasant tasks, leading them to take a long time to make decisions, and they'll definitely try and avoid things if they can. So if that person's on the journey with you, they'll try and avoid difficult situations that they feel uncomfortable about, and that can get in the way of themselves and others. And so there's an 80% chance that you'll have a far greater potential for success and happiness if you can remove some of these imposter syndromes that are getting in the way for you to be your true, authentic self and really enjoy what you want to achieve. Most people have identified two key imposters that affects who they are and what they're doing each day. There'll be times when we don't have that, and there'll be other times that we do.
Thanks, Dawn. We'll come back to her in a bit. Now, what did you think to those different types of imposter syndrome? I literally recognise myself in all nine.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there, Vic. This is the first time, actually, that I linked self-sabotage and self-saboteur to imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And for me, it gave me a lot more clarity about almost like the different levels of it and how all of the different types can almost have a really compound effect.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've always lumped imposter syndrome as this homogenous thing. Thinking about it this way, I recognize some of these behaviors that I'd never associated with imposter syndrome. But thinking about this, I'm like, oh, of course, that makes complete sense.
Sometimes we need these conversations to really take a step back and almost like reflect and assess where we are, because the way that Dawn describes it, it can be almost like a vicious cycle then.
Breaking it down then almost makes it easier to tackle.
Definitely.
Do you recognise any of these behaviours? There is actually a quiz that you can take that you asks you loads of little questions. You remember those quizzes that you get in like Cosmopolitan? It's like one of those. Are you mostly A, mostly B, mostly D? And it spits out what self-saboteur tendencies you're most prone to. And we will pop a link to that quiz, that assessment, in the show notes.
So Vic, what does your imposter syndrome look like?
Some of my imposter syndrome is procrastination, perfection, and also I don't belong here. What am I doing? I'm going to get found out. I think it stems a lot from my anxiety. So my anxiety breeds my imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
What about yours?
I can really resonate with that. And I think all of those, they interlink to each other and they can breed a really vicious cycle. You know, I've done some reflection about where mine, and mine comes from childhood and that element of just not being good enough or striving for perfection. I was actually born in Kenya. Came here when I was 2. So I practically grew up here. But, you know, there's always been an element of being from 2 different worlds in a sense, and almost 3. So born in Kenya, Indian ethnicity, but grew up in the UK. And I think as a child of parents who didn't really finish high school, education was really important to my family and to my parents in particular. They didn't really have that opportunity themselves. For them, education was really a way out. They both worked extremely hard, both self-employed.
What was it like being the first of the family to go to university, or you and your sister?
It was exciting, but there was a lot of pressure. There was always an element of striving for perfection and achieve the best. And so going back to imposter syndrome and where it comes from and how it manifests in my life, there's an element of that continuous striving to be perfect or the best.
I think it's really fascinating, Rana, that you talk about childhood, because I think that's where mine comes from. For a lot of years when I was little, I was bullied. That then sows a little seed for you saying that you're not good enough. Yeah. No one's going to want to hear what you think. No one's going to believe you. No one's going to take what you do seriously. It has like tattooed on my brain. And then mixed in with that is then wanting to be excellent and wanting to be the best and wanting to prove people wrong. And then that breeds all those, lots of those 9 tendencies that Dawn spoke about. Nikayla's got a great theory that she brought up in the session about how women's lives are full of changing roles, which can then lead on to imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a bit now, actually, what Nikayla said.
You know, we realise from some of the social impact and value work that we've done for the last few years that what we're doing at Flourish isn't just about enterprise support, but it's often helping women go through an identity transformation as a byproduct of whatever, the network, the connections, the stuff, the other agencies that they link to as well. We've just noticed over the years, women, more than men, have to go through an identity transformation for loads of different reasons, be it physical reasons, be it motherhood, menopause reasons, divorce and relationship breakdown reasons. There's all sorts of these transformations going on at any one given time that are affecting somebody's ability to flourish. And I think what we try to do is just create the space for people to go on that path and take hold of themselves.
I think that then a question to ask, and I don't know the answer to this because I'm not an expert. Are there things in our life that happen that will trigger imposter syndrome?
I think so. There's definitely elements both in your personal and professional life that can trigger it. And for me, it's definitely really hit home about the importance of working on yourself. So self-worth and self-care, I think, is so fundamental to overcoming imposter syndrome, or getting some help if that's what you need, to really work through some of the subconscious things that maybe you can't tackle on your own. Because I think it can be almost like a lifelong mission.
Mm. I've heard about your imposter syndrome, Ronnie. You've heard about mine. I've heard from loads of people that suffer from imposter syndrome. And I've never met in all my years anyone that doesn't suffer from it until I met Nikayla on this Lunch and Learn session.
100% agree. I've never met anyone It's actually really refreshing.
Let's hear from her, how she explains her imposter syndrome.
If I'm honest, I've rarely experienced imposter syndrome in my professional life. I'm here to play devil's advocate. That's not, certainly not to dismiss people's feelings or views, because I can see it is a thing. I've come to see it as a thing. And I've met far too many women in our network who say they're affected by it for it not to be. I find it a limiting concept. And there's just something that doesn't sit neatly with me, with the idea of it. I was thinking this through this morning. I was thinking, you know, we're here to live and learn. We're here to make mistakes. And I just don't buy into things that are limiting if I can help it. It just feels self-destructive. It's not helpful. It's not healthy. It's a term that covers a multitude of things. Yeah. And I think if you can take certain things in isolation, you can deal with them, or you can try and tackle it. It might suit some people and perpetuate issues, perpetuate prejudices for imposter syndrome to exist and keep us in our boxes. So I'm a bit conspiracy theorist there. But for a good couple of years, I was getting really cross. What is this thing that people keep saying exists? Why am I not experiencing it? And then I had a bigger alarm bell, actually. I thought, where do I experience this? Where am I experiencing this? It is in my personal life. And actually, it's far more worrying for me to be an imposter in my own life. It's a bit more tragic, a bit more tricky to deal with. So I think that's what I've learned from a lot of this. Put me anywhere, send me anywhere. I've got all sorts of coping mechanisms that I must have developed over the years as to why I don't suffer from this stuff. But it does touch everybody, and that's what I'm coming to see. And once you spot it, you can do something about it.
And just picking up on something you said, Michaela, it's that self-fulfilling prophecy. If that's what we think, if that's what we believe, is that who we become? But we have a choice, and that's what this is about, really. We have a choice of who we are and who we want to be, definitely.
Listening to Michaela then, I'm just like, wow.
I think it highlights the fact that regardless of your experiences, we all have the tools to overcome it.
Ron, you've just said there about overcoming imposter syndrome and putting tools in place to help overcome it. Now, we've talked loads about our personal imposter syndromes, but I really want to share with our listener the ways in which we are trying to tackle it. And then we'll hear from Dawn. So, first of all, procrastination.
The thief of time.
The thief of time. I read an interesting book called Eat That Frog.
I love that book, yeah.
And it's all about tackling the biggest, most nastiest task first. So eating the frog first. Yeah. You'll not have to eat anything as nasty during the rest of the day. And there's some really helpful tips in there about how to get stuff done. Get the biggest stuff done first. That can be one way of tackling that procrastination. I am a big advocate of taking stuff step by step. So breaking down the big things and picking them off bit by bit, and maybe just doing a bit towards that big task, and that's a sense of accomplishment. So I'm getting much, much better at that. I've started also building in stuff into my day around self-care. Throughout my professional life, I've never done that. So I've started getting up an hour earlier in the morning and meditating.
Oh, wow. Sounds great.
Doing some positive thinking practices. All the way through the pandemic, I worked out every single day. I'm trying to build a more positive mindset. That is so like a wow moment for me, because I catastrophize. I intensely overthink things. I'm trying now to reprogram this little grey mush in my head to be more positive. And I've seen the fruits of my labour actually recently, and it's not been an instant process, but I'm working towards it, and I'm working towards filling myself with more self-worth and that I deserve to be here.
Definitely. I mean, it sounds like you've put some really great tools in place to help you tackle the different elements. I think it's really important, actually, that even when we're suffering from imposter syndrome in one area of your life, so say in your work, it's really important to recognize that building in elements into your personal life will have a profound effect, because they obviously blend into each other. One of the things that's really helped is to understand the psychology behind it and the way in which my mind processes things. So identifying those negative thought patterns has been a real eye-opener for me. So mood or thought journaling has been really helpful to kind of almost pinpoint the times in the day when I may start to catastrophize or go into a real spiral. And I think different things work for different people. So again, when you're on this journey, try lots of things. I'm definitely one of those people that will give anything a go. I tried laughing yoga once, which was amazing. And I've always meant to go back to it. There's so much out there that could help you to manage both your mindset, your mood.
I mean, the meditation that I do every morning, I just search on YouTube for morning meditation,
yeah,
using meditation apps to go to sleep and just testing stuff out. Over the years, I've worked on me getting out of that mindset of like, oh, this is all woo-woo nonsense. And now I love it. I absolutely love it.
One thing that's highlighted for me in this process is the importance of having a peer network and people that you can use as a sounding board and trust. You know, imposter syndrome can be a really lonely place that you end up in. And especially if you don't share. Mm-hmm. Again, flourishes, we're both biased, but it's an amazing network. We've got women who are doing all sorts of amazing things, leading projects in all different kinds of spaces. They all have experiences to share. And I'm going to do a little plug here for our previous podcast, but we've got loads of insights to share of women. There's loads of insights in previous episodes that you can tap into as well.
You just hit the nail on the head. Just surrounding yourself with good eggs to help lift you up, give you a sounding board. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had a few issues with the business and I was like, it really floored me, this incident that I had. And so I text a friend who's also a social entrepreneur and she called me. I was in the middle of Primark speaking to her. And then Nikayla, who's one of our directors, who's also the co-presenter of the podcast, I had a phone conversation with her and she put me onto someone else and it was brilliant. Without that, I would have been lost.
I think that's a really important point because I think another element of imposter syndrome can be this fear of asking for help or feeling like you have to do everything by yourself. So it is really important to reach out and get the help where you can.
Now I want to hand over to Dawn and Nikayla, who's going to share with you some tips about how you can start changing those behaviours that you have when it comes to your imposter syndrome.
It's about, instead of when either yourself is feeling or thinking something or somebody else is feeling something or can't do that, we naturally do the soothing. Oh, you can, you're great, you'll be fine. Well, actually what we need to do, is, which is what you've been doing with Flourish, is find out where they're coming from, how they're feeling, and they're the things that we can do ourselves. Find out who we are, what it is that we want to do, where's the support, surround yourself with support and people and situations that make you feel good. It is about recognizing how you're feeling, why you're feeling that way and where it comes from. And as a coach, they're the conversations that I have. Tell me about a time when actually you were feeling positive about this situation. What was that like? What's the difference between then and now? How can you bring those positive feelings into the feelings now? So they're the type of conversations we can have with ourselves. Let's look at the science bit. Why is it that we sometimes have that negative bias to our thinking? Well, research has shown that we're programmed to focus on and be stimulated with a negative bias. Maybe not all the time, they just might be sometimes. But there's a magic ratio, and this actually links to cognitive behavioral therapy, if people are aware of that, you know, changing our mindsets and encouraging ourselves to think positively. So the magic ratio is 5 to 1 of positive feelings and interactions to enable feeling positive and building positive relationships. And so there's things that we can do. Some people have gratitude diaries. And I must admit, I'm not great at that. I always think, oh my God, I get into bed all nice and cozy and think, God, I forgot to do my gratitude diary. But there's one thing that I don't forget to do, and that's clean my teeth. Even if I've had loads to drink, I clean my teeth. And so when you're cleaning your teeth, just think of 3 things that were good about today. And then when you wake up in the morning, remind yourself of those, starting on a positive, and then they finish on a positive as well. So it's that ratio of 5 to 1 positive. And it's the same with feedback as well. I do a lot of strength-based work. There's lots of research about that, about building on strengths and working with people on their strengths rather than focusing on the negative. So don't be tough on yourself. We are actually programmed for that negative bias. So the possible impact, judge yourself by the highest standards. Do we really need to do that? May lead to trying to be a perfectionist, holding on to those flaws, mistakes and criticism. I can't do that because these are the things that just stop me all the time. And feeling a fraud, overworking me, spending ages producing something when actually I could have just finished it hours before. Letting that self-sabotage, oh no, now's not a good time, I'm going to put it off, I'll do it a different time. Holding back and just really procrastinating, thinking, oh no, what can I do? What would be the best way? Maybe I need to do this, maybe I need to do that. So they're the possible impact. But then is it real? You know, some of you might be sitting there thinking, no, I don't think that is a thing for me.
Because I thought this morning. So yeah. I was thinking, for me, it's that be kind to yourself thing. And it sounds really cheesy, but sit with the discomfort to a point and work out where it's coming from, you know, rather than whitewash it or dismiss it. It doesn't sound very healthy, but push through the burn, I call it. If you can push through the burn where you feel able and spot and recognize what you have achieved so that you can, you know, draw on when you need to bat off those securities. And making it very simple. I love what you said about when you're brushing your teeth. And this was my brushing your teeth. I put a good dance around the kitchen to your favourite tune, even if it's only a tune in your head.
A big thanks to Dawn and Michaela for sharing their experiences and insights. Now, we'd love to hear from you and how you square up to your imposter syndrome. We're on @flourishtogethercic on Twitter, or you can email us via our website, flourishtogether.org.uk.
Finally, we welcome Dawn back. Rana, she's not gone. We welcome her back to answer some imposter syndrome questions from our listeners. And she sat down with me to answer them. Now, Dawn, thank you for joining us again for some more Flourish fun. It was absolutely fascinating to hear from you earlier. So we've brought you back to answer some listener questions about imposter syndrome. Now, all these ladies are all social entrepreneurs from the Flourish Network. So first up, we've got Kitty, and I consider this a bit of a classic case of imposter syndrome.
So my name's Kitty, and I run creative confidence workshops. And prior to COVID, I was going into residential homes and delivering workshops like performance poetry, Mackintosh sing and sign. I mean, it was going amazing. And I was doing so many freebies, and people were saying, oh yeah, we'll definitely take you on. And I just thought I had to keep doing these freebies. And it was only until I went to the Yes building and I talked to Sammy, and Sammy Logan is amazing. She just said, you cannot keep doing this. You need to, people are taking the mickey basically out of you. You know, you need to start charging. And I didn't know what to charge. It was only until one of the girls sat me down and said, you've got to think about how long it takes before you put your program together, how many hours worth, and then your travel expenses, blah, blah, blah. And slowly that money that I asked for, they jumped and they said, yeah, that's fine. And then I thought, I wish I'd asked for more because it wasn't quite enough. From then, and you know, I started to ask for more money for what I was worth, because I realised how much work was going into it. But I felt, sometimes you felt like, oh, I'm being cheeky. I felt cheeky asking for payment almost. I want to go into it as well, the more corporate market, because I feel like I am worth it, but I wouldn't know what to charge, and I wouldn't, I'd have to attack it a different way. And it's like, how do I get there to the corporate side of people? I'm not frightened of them, but I want to know how to get there.
Next is Medea, and similar to Kitty, she talks about the feelings she has when it comes to charging people for her services.
I'm currently a motivational speaker, and it's something that I've been doing for free over the last 2 years in communities. Well, when I had a mentor, I had a business mentor before, he constantly got mad at me because he's like, you need to charge these people for your time. And, you know, so I'm saying, no, no. But now, because I'm struggling financially myself, it's making me realize I really need to. But I find it really difficult to, like Kitty said, like to ask for money. It's like, you know, okay, how much should I ask? Maybe £50. No, my mentor was like, no, actually, you're worth £100. You're worth £200. It's all about the low confidence that I have in myself in asking people for money. You know, it's some sort, and it probably goes back to my money blocks, because growing up in a household where we didn't have money, and we're not very, oh, give me the money. It's all about giving, giving, giving. And it's like, and now I'm learning to perceive. Recently started off any event that I go to, before I wouldn't ask them, do you pay? And the last event I went to, I asked them straight up, look, I charge £100 per hour for my speaking, and are you able to pay that? In this case, they weren't, because they were charities, and we're only starting out, but we will pay for your petrol.
Thanks, my dear. Finally, it's Michaela, who's had a little bit of a knock to her confidence.
My name is Michaela Parnell, and I'm the founder of HS Action Together. It's basically a community group at the moment, and slowly but surely developing into a social enterprise. So the reason I'm trying to do this is because of my lived experience, and I'm totally aware of others with this condition called hidradenitis suppurativa. We call it HS for short. It's a very painful, chronic condition, misunderstood, misdiagnosed a lot, no cure, no effective treatments. It's painful, and it affects you psychologically, emotionally, and physically. So I think the combination of my lived experience with the condition has kind of fed into the imposter syndrome of never feeling good enough. Am I doing things right, etc.? So basically, because of everything I went through and the barriers I faced and finding out about others, I did a biology degree, and I always doubted myself. Was I good enough? Were my assignments good enough? And I always put a lot of pressure on myself. And even though I got good grades or really good feedback, I was still doubting myself. And it was the same on my master's. So I did a part-time science communication and future media master's at the University of Salford. And I'll be honest, I did struggle, because obviously I'm battling this chronic condition and the barriers that come with it. And my lecturers were phenomenal, and the other students on my course, and they were always praising me and saying, oh no, you really know your stuff and everything else. And they all knew I was so nervous, and I was like, am I getting it across right? Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'd like double check stuff, triple check. Check the facts. And even then, I'd still be worried, am I getting it wrong? Is the content I'm producing any good? And I'll be honest, it's like with the whole lockdowns that we've been through, with the pressures of being a mom and caring for parents and things like that, and my condition getting worse with the stress, it affected my confidence and fed into me feeling more like an imposter, because I had to take a step back from my master's and take a step back from pursuing the goal of the CIC and things like that, but still just trying to be there to support people in the community. And even now, I'm always thinking, am I good enough? And it's just trying to figure out a way that I can kind of get past that and build that confidence up. I think that's what the big niggling thing for me is.
So you've heard from our listeners, the women in our network, Kitty, Medea, and Michaela. Now, Dawn, what do you think? What feedback can you give them?
Oh, so firstly, thank you to all three of them for sharing their stories and being so open and so honest. And I just want to say that a lot of the things that they said, I've felt and still feel sometimes, you know, and I'm 7 years into setting up my business. So what stood out for me was that language around charging and costs, and giving out freebies, and, you know, you've got bills to pay as well. So things that I heard you say were, oh, I feel really awkward about asking for money. And, you know, I'm saying, well, can you give me this? And, well, how much do you have? What are you hearing here? Because the picture that came to mind for me was somebody who was possibly vulnerable, person asking for money who isn't actually providing a service. Mm-hmm. And that's not you guys. You are professional and you've got lots of years of experience and expertise. And I understand some of you are working with communities and charities and they haven't got possibly as much money. So let's think about the language that we use. So things like, okay, so these are my normal rates. I'm happy to be flexible, but I'd really like to support you. And so it's using language like, these are my costs, this is what I charge, which then lets people know that actually that's because you're providing a service for them. And then a few people said, how do I get that balance right? And it reminded me of a number of years ago, I was working with somebody and he wanted me to do a piece of work with him and we were looking at costs. And I remember saying to him, gosh, we're not really charging an awful lot, are we? Which means that we're not getting an awful lot. And then he said, let me draw you something. He drew these scales and he said, sometimes we have work that comes in and it pays this much. And other times we have work that comes in that pays that much. And what comes in that pays this much supports the work here, which probably is a lot of our values-driven stuff, our charities and communities. And so it balances itself out. So you do need to think about what are your costs? And then actually what will enable you to maybe lower those costs for the charities? And actually, I sent an email recently to a client and I said, these are my normal costs, but I'd really like to work with you. So please don't let this put you off. Let's have a conversation. And then they replied and said, oh gosh, that's nowhere near what we can pay. Mm-hmm. And I replied, I understand. I went and had a meeting with her and she said, this is what we've got. And I said, tell me your wish list. And then I put something together that enabled me to actually work really locally with a client I really love and can support them. And we'll be able to see some real positive outcomes as well. Then the other thing that I heard around was about reframing your offer. And that's about changing your mindset, I think, as well. So I've heard lots of experience. You went to university, you've done different courses. How many years has that taken? I know that I've worked in my field for 30 years and my qualifications have built up over that time. So let's think about a solicitor or an accountant. So we know they're qualified. We know it's taken them a lot of years to build up that. We can't do that work because we're not qualified. We haven't got the experience. And so if we need their services, we have to pay for that. And that's the same with you guys. If you're going to them saying, this is how I can add value, people will be able to tap in and use your skills. And so there's a cost involved in that. And so when you're starting those conversations, it's around starting with what's strong rather than what's wrong. So this is my offer. This is how I think I can add value. These are my normal rates. I can be flexible. I really want to work with you. I really think we can make a difference. Picking up on your professionalisms. So me, I'm a coach. I use my title in my postgrad qualification, which was postgrad in business and executive coaching. So when people say, what do I do? I don't just say, oh, I'm a coach. I say, I'm a business and executive coach. There's a difference. I also run courses. I don't just say, oh, I run courses. I say, I facilitate leadership and management programs. And then I go in and I discuss with different clients what their needs are. I'm sure you guys do that as well. And so I'm a consultant. So I'm a business and executive coach. I'm a consultant and I facilitate leadership and management programs. I went to this event a couple of years ago and there was somebody there who was fab. And she said, I am a professional public speaker. So she said, when I first started off on my bio and my CV, I used to put, I'm a public speaker. But she said, the first time I got paid, I changed my title to professional public speaker. And if we equate that to footballers, professional footballer, yeah, they're getting paid. And so that language is really key for you to hear it yourself and for other people to hear it. And then it was Kitty in the main really was talking about working in the corporate world. And she said, I need to tackle it in a different way. So my question would be to Kitty and to everybody, if you're looking at moving into another area, why do you think you need to go about it in a different way? If it's worked in one way, why couldn't it work with another? And I'm thinking that probably a lot of your work has come from people that you know and the connections and the referrals. And that's how it works across the board. It's the same with me. All my work has come from the connections, referrals, and people that I know. So I'd write a big list of all the different connections and let them know what you want to do. And something else around working in the corporate world. For me, a lot of my work is public sector. And so I already knew huge organisations that support the public sector. And I tapped into them and said, this is my background. I'd love to be able to work with you, and hopefully I could add some value to what you're doing. And so that's a really great way to get into the corporate sector, which organisations are already working with them, so that you're not going in as just you, a standalone person. That made me think about when I was first setting up my own business, there was somebody who I used to bring in to do training for my organisation, huge public sector organisation. And I said to him, I'm thinking about setting up my own business. He said, oh, we might be able to work together. I thought, God, oh my God, wouldn't that be fab if I could work for him? He's been like established for a long, long time. So we met and he said to me, okay, Dawn, tell me what your unique selling point is. So I started talking about all my strengths, you know, what was strong rather than what was wrong. I said, well, I've worked for the public sector for a long time. I know it inside and out. I understand how communities work, with a big long list of everything. And he goes, oh, right, okay. And what do you think the outcome might have been at the end of that? Do you think he wanted me to go and work with him?
Did he like bite your hand off?
Well, I think he did want me to go to work with him. I don't really know, because I never pursued it. I walked out of that meeting and I thought, you know, that was really useful and it'd be great if we did work with each other in some way. But actually, I don't need anybody else because I've already got all my connections. My unique selling point, I can go and sell that, because he was really good, but his background wasn't public sector. People often say, well, do men have the same issues as women? Do they self-sabotage and question themselves? And I do have male and female clients. So yeah, absolutely. Men have similar concerns as women. But if we look at the research tells us when we're going for a job and we see the specification and the job description, a man will go for that job if they meet 40% or more of the criteria. A woman will go for that job if they meet 90% or more of that criteria. So what does that tell us about men and women? So we need to shift that. And, you know, if we're looking at something, think, okay, I might not be able to do all of that, but actually I can do these bits. So it's that starting with what's strong and what's wrong. Mm. So yeah, it's about mindsets. It's about the language that we hear, what we're telling ourselves and what we say to others. And sometimes I'm picturing myself, I'm driving to run this course or meet a client and I think, oh gosh, oh, is this where I get found out that I'm just not as good as maybe they think I am? And oh, what if this doesn't work? And then what I do is I think to myself, when did I last feel this way? And I take myself back to that time and I think, what happened then? Well, actually what happened, it was fine. And so that's what we call in coaching terms, banking our successes, put them in a box and bank them. And then when we're feeling, I can't do this, you open that box and remember what it was like. It was probably great. And so it's about that reflection and that awareness. Take yourself back to something positive, tap into it and think, no, I'm going to be okay. And that's how to get where you need to be.
And that's how you can square up to imposter syndrome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's so useful. So many takeaways. Just finally, how can we find out more about you, about your executive and business coaching?
So you can find me on LinkedIn and it's Dawn Kelly, Actualize, which is the name of my company. And if you would like some more information, I always send people out my coaching profile, which says what coaching's about, my background, my qualifications, my specialisms. So there's three different ways there that you can get more information about what I do and what my offer is.
And website?
So I something that I always thought, I need to get a website put together. And I've got somebody there who's ready to build it. But to be honest, I always refer people to my LinkedIn, my coaching profile and my overview, because I haven't actually had time to get my website done. So if you think about what I've just done, I've started with what was strong rather than what's wrong. So when you said to me, how can we find you? I didn't start stuttering like I just did when you asked about my website. I said, well, you can find me here and there. I didn't make apologies. Oh, I haven't got a website. But if you find me, you can find me on LinkedIn and I can do this. I really sold it. So yeah, start with what's strong rather than what's wrong.
Do you know what, Dawn? I think that's your new hashtag.
I know, I'm always thinking it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much, Dawn. So that's it for this episode of the Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. I've been Vic.
And I've been Rana. We can't wait to hear how you're standing up to imposter syndrome, so do share. Until we see you again, get binging on our back catalogue of podcast episodes, all designed to help you start or sustain a social venture.
We've got episodes on governance, fundraising, measuring your impact, and ways you can keep healthy while doing it all. We hope to see you again soon. Bye.
Bye. Supporting Women in Social Enterprise is a Mike Media production.